Welcome to the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. On this show, we feature different programs, individuals, and initiatives focused on being more inclusive of individual needs. We invite you to learn right alongside us. If you want some additional resources or access to our courses, please visit our website or follow us on social media. But for right now, let's get right to the episode. Today on our show, we're tackling a topic that might surprise you: the hidden obstacles lurking in the world of short-term rental properties. So many of us have dove into this world looking for a place to stay for a weekend getaway, a business trip, or an adventure with friends. However, this experience can be greatly hindered by the struggle to find accessible rental properties. And it's not just physical barriers that can prevent people from renting a space. Everyone deserves the freedom to travel, to experience new places, and to create lasting memories, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. In this episode, we spoke to Lorraine Woodward, founder of Becoming Rentable, a platform that allows people to find accessible short-term rentals, including searching by accessibility features and filters. Lorraine gave us some amazing insight into accessibility within these spaces, and I have to say, I learned so much from our conversation, and I know that you all will too. So let's dive right in to learn more about accessible short-term rental properties. Hello, and welcome back to the Assembly Inclusion Podcast. Today, we're joined by Lorraine Woodward from Becoming Rentable, and we're going to be discussing the organization's mission of increasing accessibility within short-term rental properties. So Lorraine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's start off with talking about the inspiration behind founding Becoming Rentable. What was the story behind that?
I have two boys, 26 and 28, hard to believe, and the three of us have muscular dystrophy. So, you know, traveling for us was challenging for a lot of reasons. I thought it was our family, you know, because there's three of us, it's really challenging. And so when the boys graduated high school, I knew I wanted an opportunity for them to experience a vacation, an opportunity for them to have their friends and do something out of their geographic area that they live in. It was at a time that I had retired from my business of communications of almost 30 years and decided that, okay, we are in Raleigh, North Carolina, about 3 hours away is the ocean. So let's look at building a property for our family. And I looked at our property being for myself, the one with the most minimal physical abilities, so it'd be fully accessible. But I also knew I wanted a revenue stream. So we ended up doing a short-term rental. We started renting in 2015. And in 2020, I was turning 60. And I'm like, all right, our family was enjoying the rental property. And we had over 400 families that have been staying at our property. And it was their stories. I'm sitting out at the beach and I'm just leaning back. I'm looking at the sky, watching the birds going, what do I want to do in this next decade of life? What brings me joy and happiness? And it's like, I love my renters. I love the beach, but I like being a part of their experience and their life. And the stories that they're telling me are all the same, and they're horrible, and how difficult it is to find a place. You know, I thought we were the exception and we're not. And that was truly my inspiration to create a change.
That's a great inspiration. I hear that a lot, that there are so many circumstances, and we talk to a lot of different people in different fields, that a lot of people think they're the only ones. And then they realize that there are so many people in the same situation as they are. So that's kind of a great inspiration to start the organization. I think your website mentioned that, and I want to make sure I get this right, it's only 0.01% of short-term rentals in the U.S. are considered accessible.
I hate to say that it's true, but it is. Just in the United States, the numbers continue to change. It's anywhere from 1.3 million to 2 million short-term rental properties. So you have all of that. But what is really accessible is 1,300. So if you even amortize 1,300 among 50 states, you know, it's not many. In fact, I received a call from a family who wanted to vacation in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale. And they said, you have the most short-term rental properties, more than Airbnb and VRBO. I go to Fort Lauderdale and there's nothing. The challenge is in the short-term rental industry, historically, it's only been about wheelchair access. I use a wheelchair, I'm cool with that. But there's a lot more people that want to vacation that use, walkers and crutches and canes and cognitive and all these other issues. But there's the idea that, oh, my house isn't accessible because I have a step. I have a step and shower. It's not accessible for people with disabilities. And so our job has been and is to change the way we look at accessibility in the short-term rental. On our website, we have 43 filters, and we believe that it's about choices. So what I need in an accessible short-term rental is different than what my boys needs. And it may be different than the family that wanted a place in Fort Lauderdale. And the only way we can determine what is accessible is by clicking on those filters. There's not a magic, formula for this equals accessibility, but it's educating what are those 43 filters? What does a zero threshold entry look like? I mean, that's a mouthful of words. And all that means is that my wheelchair can get in the front door, that there's not a step, there's not a big lip that I have to navigate and go ba-dump bump to get into the door. But again, those are big words, and people don't know what that means. And that's our job to go and provide that education. And it's in a field that has not known much about accessibility. And so one of our greatest challenges is getting the word out and explaining what it means.
I think that's a great point because I think a lot of people, when they think accessibility, their first thought is immediately wheelchair accessibility. But when I went on your website and was looking at those 43 filters, you really see the broad range of things that people could need. One of the recurring themes on the show is always that, one person with one disability is just one person and they may not need what another person needs, like you had mentioned. So I think it's great that you're trying to get the word out there about the other accessibility features that most property owners aren't thinking about. What are some of those? I know there's 43 of them, which is impressive and a lot.
Well, it's the simple things like people don't think about the driveway. But again, for me in a wheelchair, I need hard surface. If I go onto gravel or dirt, well, you know what? I'm going to make a dirty mess. My wheels are just going to keep spinning. Gravel's going to go everywhere. I'm stuck, and it's no fun to get me out of that. So I talk about, what's your driveway made of? Is it concrete? Is it pavers? Is it dirt? Is it grass? Is it gravel? And then I even ask the question, what is at the end of your driveway threshold to the street? Because sometimes that's the point for me that I can't get over that dip or that downgrade effort from the driveway to the street. So we look at that, and people don't even think about the driveway. And then it's like, but the front of my house has three steps, but the garage has zero steps. And so your entry of access to be wheelchair mobility accessible doesn't have to be at the front door. In fact, we built a little model house in Conway, Arkansas, called the Little Yellow House. It's a little 900 square foot bungalow, and it is as sweet as can be. But we designed it so that it's an example and an education module of what an accessible property can look like. And people look at the front and go, Lorraine, there are three steps. And I'm like, yes, there are three steps. And there wasn't the width of the yard to put a ramp that would go all the way around the house to get the grade. So we made the back entrance as the primary entrance to the property of being wheelchair accessible. And then the third element of surprise is when we say, oh, you have a step and shower. That's great. Thinking that the only kind of shower that is accessible is wheel in. And wheel in is what I have to have. But there are people that might use a manual chair that have the upper body strength and may be paralyzed from the waist down, but they prefer that step. And then they transfer to a bench or a shower chair because they don't want the water to come out of the shower. Sometimes that does happen. And so an accessible shower to them is one that has that shower chair or that bench that they can transfer, but the step in is not a problem. And so people are surprised by, oh, I didn't know that. And I love to get the aha moments from people. That makes me really happy. Those are big things from an accessible standpoint, but maybe things you already have.
I think that's a great point about the aha moment, because even as I was going through those 43 things, there were a lot on there that I was like, I didn't think about a property having that as being accessible, but you're right. It just depends on what people need, and then they can pick what kind of works for them. And people might may not even realize things they already have could be accessible to someone. So I appreciate the fact that you have all of those features listed out to help people realize that their property might be accessible in some ways already. Even if they don't have, a front porch, like you said, that is accessible, there might be alternate avenues and things like that. So I know you had mentioned that people automatically jump into wheelchair accessibility when they think about accessibility of properties overall and thinking about physical space accommodations. But what are some other cognitive, hearing, sight, or I think your website mentioned aging as well, features that becoming rentable considers when assessing properties?
Right now, our certifications are specific to mobility. And I'm excited to say that in January, when this podcast will air, we will have our certification for cognitive. And our cognitive community is autism, it is anxiety, it's PSD, it is Alzheimer's, dementia, and that is an invisible disability. And so that is hard to understand at times. That going, okay, I don't get what I can't see. And so that's really exciting moving forward for us, not only because it's never been done to certify accessibility for our cognitive community, here we are, but also to look at what that equals. So many times in mobility, there is a greater expense because we're widening doors at times. We might be adding ramps, access to the property, gutting bathrooms. I mean, it can range from $1,000 to many thousands of dollars. But as we look at our cognitive, it is blackout curtains for those that are sensitive to light. It is having dimmer switches. It is having odor-free chemicals or odor-free laundry detergent. So we look at those aspects that trigger possibly an episode, and we look at safety. For example, we advocate for a secondary lock. Again, it's less than $5. You can get a slide or a chain lock, put it at 5 feet. And what that does is if you have somebody on the autism spectrum or somebody with dementia or Alzheimer's and they're wanderers. And so it's like, oh, I can unlock the door. And they go to open it, that secondary lock is going to give somebody that extra few seconds or minutes to go, Lorraine, you can't go outside. We're going to go outside in a little bit, but we're all staying inside right now. And so that's a safety measure that can impact not only people with disabilities, but our children, our teenager trying to get out. The beauty, I think, of our cognitive as well as our mobility is how it broadens safety and experience and benefits for all of us. But our cognitive specifically are those types of things. And the cost to reach a community that is as large as, I mean, we're looking at after COVID with anxiety is enormous. But again, they're not being recognized because nobody's ever looked for these before.
That's a good point. I always think about those invisible disabilities, as you said. That's the market nobody's thinking about when they're making accommodations. And that's, I appreciate, and I didn't realize it's coming out that quickly, the
I
certification
know,
for
I know. We're
cognitive. That's
really excited.
exciting.
And again, one of those other aha moments that we talked about in mobility with cognitive is having closed caption. The benefit for those with visual impairments, as well as our cognitive community. And it's like, oh, my TV is a smart TV. It has that. We'll say that in your description so that if you happen to not have that tablet for somebody to enjoy, then you know that you have the closed captioning on your TV. We do advocate that TVs are secure to the wall. So again, we have a safety component there. Also, our vision and hearing. A common benefit is the open concept in design. And that particularly is beneficial for our hearing community because then you can see people who are doing sign language or reading lips. If you have a lot of walls, and you're yelling from the kitchen to say dinner's ready, that if you have these walls and somebody can't hear you, Then, by having it more open, you can get their attention visibly by waving, reading lips. And so, again, it's like, oh, I didn't think about that. And that's a huge benefit.
And that is something that I think a lot of properties probably have now, because that open concept is just so popular for a variety of reasons. I never would have thought about that from an accessibility standpoint, but that makes a lot of sense that it's easier to get someone who potentially has a hearing impairment or is hard of hearing their attention easier in that open concept home or property. There's so many things that I hadn't considered, but makes so much sense when you explain it that I'm sure there's a lot of people who look at your features and the accommodations and they say, oh, you know, I do have that. Even the closed caption TV, most smart TVs have that built in right away. I didn't even think about listing that on a property at all.
And as a traveler, you have a young child, and when you go to a family's house or a vacation, or you want to work from a short-term rental, you think about all the stuff you have to bring. And so if there's that one less thing, you know, that you don't have to bring, it's like Yahoo. And another example of those I never thought about was a blender. You know, you may think about a blender for your margaritas, your daiquiris, but for our disability community, a blender is really important for Uncle Tom, who just got new dentures and we need to blend food, or somebody that has a feeding tube. And so if they don't have to bring that blender, that's one less thing they don't have to bring, which is great. And it's why we advocate, we call it our able closet. And an able closet are those items that you have available that a potential renter won't have to bring. It could be a commode lift, you know, something that allows you to sit 4 inches, 6 inches taller. So if you're in your third trimester, you're pregnant, it's hard to get up. Yeah, need those 4 inches. Or if you have limited mobility, like my boys have, they're still mobile, but it's hard to get out of seats. That 4 to 6 inch platform is one less thing they would have to bring to a short-term rental. And so that leaves more room for snacks in the car or treasures you find on vacation.
And that makes it so much better to travel just to have those few key things that are so easy for a rental property to add into a space. It's not going to cost them a lot to add those things if they don't already have them, which I'm sure in a lot of those cases, they probably already have them to begin with.
And it broadens their scope of potential renters. You know, we've had wheelchair accessible homes my whole adult life. And I tell everybody when you're buying a home, building a home, renovating a home, that you have now broadened who can buy your home. And, you know, the sellable aspect of our accessibility has really benefited us because we've sold our homes very quickly. A new concept that we will be rolling out this next year as we look at accessible short-term rentals and what are the benefits. And it's something that when people say, Lorraine, what's the hardest thing about having a disability? And it's not hard physically, but emotionally, it's sad that I can't go across the street and have a cup of coffee with my neighbor. You know, there's a neighborhood cookie exchange and I can't be there. A party. You know, the boys are, had gone to a birthday party and I can't hang out with the other mothers. And so that's not a lot of fun. So we look at visibility. So your property may not have that roll-in shower. Your bed may be really tall and not accessible, but you may have elements that brings a guest. So you have a family and there are three rentals that your family has booked. And you really want to make sure that you get to go to the rental where grandma is, because grandma makes the very best food. So that's called visibility. So you may have that 0 degree threshold or that one step for a walker, which means that your friends, your families with disabilities can come to you. And that really is a huge benefit as we look at mental health issues of what do we struggle with. That's probably for me, my number one thing that I wish I could do. I know I'm incredibly blessed with a lot of things and I love hosting everybody, but it would be really nice to go somewhere else if I could. And so, a benefit from a business perspective and looking at accessibility is even that partial element that brings visitors to you.
That's a great point too. Again, something else I'm learning so much today. something else I hadn't thought about, but that makes so much sense. Okay, maybe the features for staying more than one day might not be there, but even just the visitor aspect of, yes, now my rental property is welcoming for other people in my family who may be staying somewhere else, want to come visit and stay for dinner or lunch or, a drink or whatever. They can still come in and enjoy that part, even if the shower isn't accessible because they're not going to be using it while they're there with me.
Exactly.
That's a great point. So how do you actually, because you have so many properties listed on your website, how do you vet them to make sure that the information that they're giving is accurate, like that they have, the right type of driveway or the right threshold to get into a house? How do you make sure that's accurate
That is so critical. And those are the horror stories that we hear
maybe?
about is that, oh, this place said it was accessible, and we get there, and oh, by the way, there are five steps. So what we do is we look at what you as a potential renter would look at. So we get their URL. When they have a property certified, and all of the properties on our website have to be evaluated and validated and be certified. So when you come on board, you have an onboarding process. So you click 20 filters or features that you have in your property. You then submit a photograph showing here's a 36-inch door, here's the zero threshold entry, here is the driveway. It's similar to what Airbnb does. The difference being, we're just a listing platform, we're not a booking platform. So somebody gets another exposure opportunity by coming here. Instead of a potential renter going to Airbnb and VRBO and booking.com and Vacasa and going down these different sources, we're that one-stop shop. We have 111 booking platforms that come. And so the validation is critical for us as a business and critical for the visitors who come to us. And the best way we can validate is actually seeing those pictures online. The reason we chose not to go the route of personal visitation is what we see in the home may not be what the potential renter may see because the renter has not captured that in their description. And so this allows us to go beyond our community, our state, our country. We're in Canada and we will be global next year. And so we do that simply by that process of showing the photograph. Now, in our cognitive area, it's an invisible disability. So how do we track that? We again have our filters and you say what you have, but we have a pledge and it's the pledge of this is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. It's like they are taking responsibility that they are clicking on these elements to say, I promise you, I have it. And if we hear they don't, A, they're off our site, and B, they will be reported because it's false advertising. It really has an impact in our industry about what people are putting online. There's already an impact in our industry by falsifying short-term rentals. People will create this false rental, give them the money, and then somebody gets there and goes, excuse me, I'm not a short-term rental. This is our private home. So it's really important for us that we are very firm about what that pledge equals. And if it is not met, what are the consequences?
That makes sense. Yeah, I've heard horror stories about things like that happening to people, and I can only imagine. Unfortunately, I'm sure there are people out there who will check things off that they don't have. But I would hope for the most part, most people realize that it's in their best interest to not lie about things they have, especially because there's so many things that are so, like we had mentioned before, so easy to already have. Why would you lie about having
Exactly.
it?
Well, we hope. And so it'll be a test. We're rolling it out, available in January, but we're excited about it. We feel it's more important. And I'm a person that I trust first. I don't have a reason to second guess you. I would rather go in with open eyes, identifying parameters of what we are doing, but trust you first. We hear from the side of, we believe you, we trust you. And there's a lot of people that will benefit from this because of what you are saying.
I'm not a short-term rental owner, but I can even just imagine like looking at your list and being like, oh, well, you know what? Blackout curtains are not that expensive from the store down the street. Let me go put some in because I didn't even think about that, but that's easy. And that could benefit a lot of people. Here we go. Let me add that in. The hope, I guess, would be too then that they'll see things and then be like, oh, that's an easy fix. Let me add that in. Even if it benefits one person, it benefits one person, and that's good
Right.
enough. Yeah.
And it benefit my husband who has no disabilities, but really does not like, I will barely have my phone. I'll have it under the covers and I'll just check the time or something. And it's like, I see light. And it's like, how can you see light? I have it under the covers and everything. So he is one of those people who sees, oh, blackout curtains, let's go there. They can benefit a wider range of people.
Oh yeah, I have chronic migraine and I have blackout curtains in my room right now. And just knowing that that's available, or even the closed captioning, I've mentioned this on a couple episodes so far that I am so into closed captioning. I have the captions on now. I have it on my TV. My husband hates it, but I always have it on. So even just seeing that, I'm like, yes, it just helps me focus so much better. I don't need it necessarily, but knowing it's there, like that would just make me so happy.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. It's creating those memories, creating those positive experiences, and it's educating others. I mean, my boys hate our bathroom at the beach. It's really big. I come up with really crazy ideas. And when I was building this house, I said, I want our bathroom to support a gurney and three attendants. I don't know why I wanted that. So it's enormous. And my boys are like, Mom, why did you build this bathroom so big? And it's like, I don't know. I could have really used some extra space in that second bedroom. But again, what it does, I love the big bathrooms and we have barn doors. And we learn from support dogs, they love barn doors too. And particularly those dogs that like water because they can take their nose and open the door. We've had to put locks on those barn doors so those service dogs don't enter. But little kids love the bathrooms. In fact, our bathroom is so big that one family took our hospital bed, which is on wheels, and wheeled it into the bathroom because it was darker in that room than it was in the guest bedroom. And you don't have to, I can tell everybody, you don't have to have a big bathroom to be accessible. The bathroom on the third floor is really, really small and it's perfect for me. I roll my wheelchair in, I can elevate me up, have the grab bars, and I can do everything. It's not the turning radius of 5 feet, but for me, I can wheel forward and I can go backwards and it's perfect. I love it. And when you have a big bathroom, it gets cold sometimes, you know.
I appreciate the perspective on that too, and I'm sure that's something that our listeners, anyone or anyone who has a rental property in general, will be happy to hear about the different sizes and things like that. I did want to talk about, you'd mentioned it before, the little yellow house that you built through becoming rentable. What was the inspiration behind creating it? And I know it has so many different accessibility features, but what are some of the key highlights of it that you have?
When we started becoming rentable, the idea was a TV show. And we've pivoted quite a bit based on what the needs are. But anyway, coming from a communications background, trying to reach the masses, I'm going, all right, we're going to do a 22-minute streaming show. You can binge watch, you know, five episodes and away we go. But as we were looking for properties for the show, we found out, wow, where are they? This is really hard. And we wanted a property that represented our company. So it was mobility, cognitive, vision, hearing, and aging accessible. So we wanted a lot of stuff in it. Well, I'm from Conway, Arkansas. Now I went to college at Hendricks College. My mother lives in Conway. Her house is not accessible. And there were no hotels or any properties that were accessible. We're 1,400 miles away. So we have not gone back home very much. And it's almost 40 years now since I've graduated from Hendricks. And I have yet to go to an alumni event because there was not a place. So I thought, okay, if we need to build this model educational property, why not build it in Conway? And a lot of people go, why Conway, Arkansas? Well, my mom is there and I want to visit. I want to go to Hendricks events. And it's not far from Little Rock, the capital. And it was affordable. Bought a little 900 square foot 1940s bungalow. And that's where we created the little yellow house. And I wanted something that people could touch, feel, see. So I could do a lecture at the university and talk to students about accessibility if you're in sports medicine or an OT or a PT. And then they could go to the little yellow house, touch it, feel it, see it, graduate, and now we're educating the next generation. It is a working short-term rental, and that was important also. And the features that we put in, oh my gosh, it's adorable. I mean, I just added scallops everywhere I could. A couple of my favorite things are not practical for most properties, but they are really, really fun. So people go to becomingrentable.com and check out the little yellow house. We have two bedrooms. We have a primary bedroom and a secondary, and the secondary is smaller. And we designed it to utilizing traditional equipment in a different way. So in the primary bedroom, we have a traditional regular twin bed, and then we have a twin hospital bed. You put them together and you have a king size bed. So you put a king size headboard, nail it to the wall, and voila, it looks like a king size bed. Nobody knows, and you can't see that it's actually a hospital bed with a twin bed next to it. And so in the secondary room, we took part of the closet from the primary room, and we made another little yellow house, but it's a playhouse. And we kept the ceiling in the playhouse 8 feet, but it's where we store the Hoyer lift. It has a little roofing with scallop shingles. It has a window with a flower box. It's got these cute little doors. And it also is a place for children to go who might have autism or have anxiety or need a place to stay. I wanted to create a space for the Hoyer lift that wouldn't scare kids. The Hoyer lift is a big device, it's an important device, but that room is so small that if you saw a hospital bed and a Hoyer lift, it might scare you. So I didn't want that to be what they see. I wanted them to see an adorable room, which it is, I might say. We have scallops on the shelf in the closet, and we don't believe in doors in closets. It allows us to showcase the closet in an adorable way. And so that was something fun. Another something fun that we did that everybody could do is we elevate the dishwasher because for those of us in a wheelchair or with limited mobility, it's easier to reach about 6 to 8 inches off the ground. So what do you do with that little extra space? Well, you put a drawer in with a food and water bowl for your service dog. So you pull the drawer out and voila, there it is. It's so cute. Oh my gosh. So I love that. Our bathroom is phenomenal. It's kind of a garden theme, a decor. We use the penny size tiles and we created a buffalo plaid floor that's in greens and creams. Oh, it's so adorable. And the bathroom sink, I bought a 1940s kitchen sink, the big sink, but it's shallow and it has the drying rack. So we did that and you roll right underneath it. So you've got some nostalgia, personality, and accessibility. Then out front on the entrance to the front door, while there are three steps, you still have to have fun. So I kept my scallops going and we took kitchen cabinet stain in a periwinkle blue and we painted scallops all over the front of the entrance to create kind of a carpet look. And then we created notch on the front sidewalk using that stain. So less than $10, you have a stain that will last forever. And we added fun because, again, having a disability is just a way of life. It doesn't say and represent who we are. It's one aspect of our life. And we wanted this property to represent life in a way that would meet the needs of people with different needs.
I love how things are multi-purposeful, but then also the design was considered in there. Because so often, so many things are just so cold and sterile and sad. There's so much life in the house. And I'm going to make sure to link in the show notes the link to the house directly so people can take a look as they're listening, just because you described it so well too. But then if they want to go take a look at what it looks like, that's awesome that it's an accessible space, but also you considered the design aspect as well.
So when I went to Conway to see the house this past summer, I ran into some folks and they said, Oh, we thought that was like a cupcake shop because it was so cute. They thought of sweet treats, and it's like, it is a sweet treat, but it doesn't sell sweet treats.
That's adorable. I love that so much. That's great that it's a model too for people to look at and see what they could potentially do with their rental or even in their home if they need
Right,
things in their home. Yeah.
absolutely. Particularly that we look at aging in place. How do we do this? What does it have to look like? And a lot of times, those who have not grown up with a disability, what they know is maybe from a rehab center or a hospital. And that's where they're getting their vision. And it's not a fun and pretty vision. Disability and creating an accessible house doesn't have to look at all sterile and uninviting. And it can really be hidden as well. You just go, wow, I didn't know that that's what that was designed for. And it's like success. Yes.
That's perfect. I wanted to ask you about, you had mentioned that you're expanding globally. So how is becoming rentable expanding the reach beyond just, I think you originally just, you were in the 50 states and I think Puerto Rico too. How are you expanding into a
Sure.
global space?
So right now it's through expanding now to Canada and having property certified. So if you're looking at going to Puerto Rico, the United States, or Canada, we now have properties in those spaces. We are also very thrilled and honored to be working with Expedia this next year in an educational campaign that will be rolling out next spring. And with that exposure and opportunities, we will be expanding and growing properties beyond North America. I credit a lot to their visibility, their commitment to what we are doing. But we also have found from we're in 2.5 years of creating this business. So we've grown pretty quickly in this short amount of time. We have heard weekly from Italy, Sweden, London, the Netherlands, I mean, all over the world, South Africa, about when are we coming there? And it's like, we'll get there, we'll get there. But people are really looking for this level of information. How do we get our property owners to share this? Because there's nobody else globally doing what we're doing. And so it's not about necessarily filling a niche, but it's filling and providing information that affects us all. And to really look beyond ourselves, and looking at how, by the grace of God, may we age. And with age comes our vision, our hearing, our mobility needs change. And so we are providing kind of an insurance for us all that when you are at that retirement age, I mean, in 2030, not far from now, just in the United States, our senior population is going to be growing by 31 million. And I'm one of the culprits of that. I am a baby boomer. And so I will be of that senior age. And by the time we're at 2030, just 6 years away, our seniors will outnumber new births in America. So, to give you an idea, that's the first time since World War II that we're going to have more seniors than new babies. And are we ready for that? There are examples of countries, and one that happened this year is Paris. You go, Paris, France, what's up with that? Well, in 2015, Paris won the grant to host the Paralympics next year. And so with that comes 350,000 people with disabilities coming in for these games. And they've had a long time to prepare. But guess what? In the area of accessible short-term rentals, right now they only have space for 5% of those who are coming to Paris for these Paralympics. So I take that example and I apply it in the United States to our seniors who have worked hard, who have saved, and now are ready to explore. Are we ready for that influx?
I didn't even know about that statistic, but that's a great point. There's going to, aside from just people who have a disability who need the access to the short-term rentals, that's a market that I hadn't even thought about that are going to go out and continue to explore as they hit retirement age and things like that, that will need those accommodations too. Wow. I didn't even realize that statistic.
So, see, you're making me really happy because you're having lots of aha moments.
I have so many today. But that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that. I was thinking just from the disability side, but then yeah, the aging on top. Yeah,
Okay, I'll
there's so
give
much
you one more
crossover.
aha moment. So when we started becoming rentable, we started with two pillars, and that is people who need the accessible short-term rental, and then the inventory side, the short-term rental on properties. Well, this year we have a third pillar, and that pillar is, believe it or not, our employers, our business travelers. Because historically, business travelers do ground travel or air travel to hotels. We have a large part of our working community and the world that hotels does not meet their needs. So employer groups do not benefit as they look at recruitment, retention, building networks within one another, life experiences. Well, now with short-term rentals, we've opened that up for employer groups that they have more people now that they could interview for potential jobs. More people can join those jobs because they have a place to stay because their job requires business travel. And I had that aha moment when a group came to me saying, Lorraine, are you aware of this? And I'm going, I never thought of it because I don't travel and I work for myself so I get others to travel. And so now I'm going, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. So those are our three pillars now of looking at our business traveler sector.
I didn't think about that either, but that makes a lot of sense because every time I travel for work or people I know travel, it's always, I'll put you up in a hotel, I'll put you up in a hotel, here you go. But you're right, that's very limiting for a lot of people. Wow, that's it's interesting how much crossover there is between the three pillars and everything.
It is. And that's why I love my job. I love having the personal experience and also being a parent that I understand it firsthand. But as a businesswoman who owns short-term rental properties, who've owned her businesses, to think of it in different perspectives and bring that commonality together so that people like you can have, oh, I never thought of that.
And I hope as our listeners are listening too, they're having those aha moments, whether they're, driving along or just hanging out and listening. I hope they're like, oh, I didn't realize that, because that's what I am right now. I did want to ask, you had mentioned a couple throughout the conversation, but what have been some of your favorite success stories and testimonials that have come out of individuals who have used becoming rentable as a resource so far?
I think it's the chance for people to have experiences that they've never had. If it's been 28 years that this one family could not find a place that met their needs, because the family could lift their son up until 12, 15 years old. That wasn't a big issue. Together, they made it happen. He's 48, 6'2", 200 pounds is very different. But they found places now that they can have those family experiences. One of my favorite experiences, which is a hard one, and I wish I could have it close to me, which I don't, our little yellow house. A family reached out and said, our dad was diagnosed with a progressive form of cancer, and they've given him 4 months to live. And we want to know if we can rent your house, but we don't know for how long. I said, absolutely. And they didn't know the level of accessibility. And they said, well, before we do that, we need to find out, can we bring in hospice and a hospital bed? And I said, you can, but you don't need to because we have two hospital beds and we have this and we have that. And they were like, really? And I said, yes, everything's in place. They said, can we move in today? I said, absolutely. So it was the mom, the two daughters, and the dog. And so for the next 14 days, all they did was share stories, laugh, hold their dad's hand, her husband's hand, and he passed away in 14 days instead of the 4 months. And they said to me that if it weren't for the little yellow house, those 14 days would have been finding ways to get dad into the house and, just the logistics. And we didn't have logistics. We had time together to love and to have a greater peace because of that. And, what better way to utilize your home than to bless somebody with that opportunity? So I would have to say that's my all-time favorite.
Oh, that's so nice and so moving all at the same time. They got time together that they
They did.
wouldn't have gotten because they didn't have to worry about, like you said, the logistics of everything. It really shows the advantage of having that type of accessible space and how it could impact people in such a positive way.
And it really is. I mean, there's so many things in life we can pay for and buy, but you can't buy time. And that's the greatest gift that we can offer is this time for families to be able to have time together.
Oh, that's so, I'm very emotional right
Oh.
now. Hang on. That's very true.
I think that again, it's important to have that emotion. I think it's important to know how what you're doing does impact. We don't always get that type of reception and things that we do because we don't know how we are changing one's life. And to be able to make those changes is a privilege. And I think so many times we look at our interactions, a lot of times in the short-term rental is primarily a business transaction. And what is being done is greater than business. It's greater than, putting money in your checking account. It really is about making lasting memories.
I can see that from everything that we talked about in this episode. And I think that's a really happy note to end on. So,
Just a happy note because it's a gift, it's a celebration, and may we all remember that.
want to thank you so much, Lorraine, for being here with us today and talking about becoming rentable. I'm going to make sure to link the website, the link to the house, and different things we talked about in the show notes for our listeners. But thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Oh, my privilege. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. I hope the information in this episode taught you something new, gave you a new idea, or showcased a new perspective. If you liked the episode, feel free to leave us a review or a comment. If you have a recommendation for an individual or an organization who would make a great guest, you can message us or send us an email at assemblinginclusion@gmail.com. See you next time.